We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 339. All right, Yankees got out of Cleveland. They salvaged the win just like they salvaged it in Toronto, but got to be honest, feeling dirty after that thing.
Yeah, I mean, when you get the lead two times and then finally a third time on the road, you'd think that you'd be able to close it out, especially after you have Nestor Cortez and Chad Green throwing up zeros, giving the ball to the guys that weren't used over the weekend. Before Sunday's game with Kainley and Ottavino, the guys that we've been relying on for a while now. And they blow the game. So it's just it's a weird way to get behind. And then let's just continue to let them tie the game because this is fun, right? Let's just keep going. Close
yeah,
it out.
It's, it wasn't easy. It was a game, though, if they had lost that and you look back after the 5-run lead, the Didi error.
Yeah.
So many missed opportunities. That would have really, really cut deep, I think. So. Thankfully, they won, and I don't know, you got to just press reset on that flight from Cleveland back to New York.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You got the Mets now, so it's one of those things where you have to really just change your focus. You get the New York series, the Mets are going to try to bring up narratives that it's their city and all this bullshit, and you just have to laugh at it, and you just say, okay, little guys, we're going to play you for a couple games. We can't even do a full set. We're just going to do two games. And we'll let you play. We'll let you play with us for a couple games, and then we'll go to Chicago.
It was a Mets city. We've talked about this because we were doing the podcast when the Mets made the World Series. It was a It was a Mets city for maybe 3.5 weeks in October of 2015.
It's still hard for me to call it a Mets city, honestly. Like there was a little bit of buzz coming out of Queens. And it wasn't just the airport. It was like the baseball team was doing something. And they had a few moments. By no means was it a New York. Were they the team of New York? That just that will
the,
never
like
happen.
You said, that was the narrative.
That was the narrative they were trying, yeah. It was an attempt.
So what are we seeing with the Yankees on this road trip? Is this just a bad road trip? They couldn't get out of their own way against a bad Toronto team. And then a sort of middling Cleveland team who
has talent.
But their big guns in their rotation are injured, and the Yankees didn't face Bauer this weekend. And they're around 500. They're talking about how they could trade Francisco Lindor at some point to just get a haul of prospects back and reset their farm system. So you go on this road trip in six games and two out of four with how the Yankees had been playing, coming off a Red Sox series win. It does not feel good, I don't think.
I mean, it's really hard for me to get down on this team, even if the wheels were to fall off at this point, because they've outperformed what we expected by so far. And any kind of regression towards the mean, honestly, would not be something that is out of the expectations, because I think that you, as a Yankee fan, at some point are waiting for that regression back to, who these guys are potentially, and not just overachieving for as much as they have done for the beginning. So you want to see these DDs come back, and we're hopefully on the cusp of getting some of our other big guys back with Judge and Stanton. And so it wouldn't surprise me. So I don't really feel terrible about it. I don't like the way that they were lost in some places, but I think that them salvaging the last game of each series is a positive thing. So I'm going to stay positive with this because I'm overall very bullish on the team.
Regression is something that actually was being talked about in our Facebook chat, and Sean put in an interesting stat about Ottavino, who's been tremendous this year, but his FIP is over 4, his expected FIP is nearly 5, and he's stranded 97% of runners. So that might indicate he could regress a little bit. I know he gave up the home run today. It was a 3-0 meatball pitch that he was just trying to get over the plate because his walks per nine are bad. Kainley was really the one that completely took a crap all over this game. It wasn't Ottavino who just gave up the one. But Ottavino is somebody who, unfortunately, we might be starting to see some regression.
Well, I mean, that was the first run. I was listening to John and Susan today because I was out doing Johnny homeowner stuff, yard work all day long. Because that has to happen too. That doesn't just keep going, So I was listening to John and Susan, And well, whether I'm not sure if the information's accurate, I will tell you what they said. That Ottavino, that was the first run he had given up in over a month. So I think 18 appearances, I think it was.
It was. That is okay. Accurate. I saw that
perfect.
As well.
So I mean, if we're talking about a regression on a 3-0 meatball that was a get me over, let's get back in the count meatball that he was, it was a sneak attack. I mean, I'm not seeing anything where that is pointing to a regression at this point. He if you take away that pitch, he hadn't given up runs, you know, into 18, 19 appearances. So
no, what I'm saying is we could start to see.
I mean, I guess that's but isn't that kind of like believing in do, which I thought you don't believe in. A lot of people don't believe in like the do factor.
But no, don't put that on me.
Isn't are you not on that camp? I don't remember. But there's a lot of people that
know
the law of averages.
That's the camp that doesn't believe in hot or cold, yeah. And they don't believe.
Aren't those the same
clutch.
Nerds? No,
yeah,
those
screw
are the same
that.
Nerds.
Those are the. I can get on board with a lot of nerd stats, and I think I've tried to sprinkle them into this podcast at an acceptable rate. But there's some things that I just cannot get on board with that the nerds start talking about.
Like perfection and things that don't come back to earth when they're so high. But yeah, I mean, look, I think he's a very good pitcher. He had a really, really very good year last year as well. So, I mean, how much of a regression are you looking for? You know, because he's pitching to... you know, a sub 2 ERA at this point. Are we talking about a regression to the 2-2-3 ERA land? Is that where we are? Is that a regression? Because, you know, he had an exceptional year last year, so there's evidence that he can put it together. And I know last year was an outlier. You know, he's hasn't put together years and years of success. So maybe this is the beginning, or maybe last year was the beginning of him, you know, with the second half of his career.
Right, and exactly. But when he's been so good, if his ERA does start to climb up to the mid to high twos, then we're in for a few bad outings.
Oh, for sure. I mean, but you know that's baseball, Susan. It's going to happen.
It is just not what you expect because both Canley and Ottavino today they'd only pitched twice in the month of June. So in the 9 previous days, they'd only pitched twice, so they were rested. Overuse was not a factor in today's game. Maybe underuse is a factor, because I know a lot of relievers, if they're not used a lot, Chapman is a guy, if he's not used a lot, then he's wild.
I could see Canley in that same camp, you know, with a guy that just likes to get jacked up. He reminds me of
he's got to release that energy somehow, or else he's just gonna be pacing back and forth in the dugout or in the
that's
bullpen.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, I think he does have to get those reps in, and not just the reps, but the adrenaline out for the game situations. Because if you hold that in too long, you know, it's no good for anybody. So, you know, he hasn't been great for his past couple outings. This one was bad, really bad. He practically gave up the game. And yeah, I'd like to see him get more. You know, I think that Boone, you know, we talk about, and I know we're going to talk about this based on the Saturday game. He is underused, I think, and I don't know why Canley especially can't get more use on that arm, because I do think he's got that bulldog in him that can go out there multiple times and really be worked.
Yeah, that Saturday game after Sabathia gives up, the Yankees had leads in all of these games early. They had a 2-0 lead Friday, coughed it up. 2-0 lead on Saturday early on the Didi home run. Sabathia, not a great start, but they're down by 2 and he goes to Holder. The only reason I can think of why he went to Holder is because the Yankees are down. But Canley hadn't pitched in a while. Ottavino hadn't pitched in a while. Why not try and keep that game close with one of those guys instead of going to Jonathan Holder, who's pitched 9 out of the last 15 games for the team and gives a back-to-back bombs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He obviously has a lot of confidence in Jonathan Holder. I don't know really where it comes from, because he hasn't been good. He had he started off... not good. Had a little bit.
I think we know what Jonathan Holder is. Well, Jonathan Holder is
had a very good year.
A middle of the road relief pitcher.
Look, Jonathan Holder's been better than that. He's been in good situations where he's come up big in the past. This year hasn't been it. It ain't it for him this year. So there needs to be a look to see this.
It's not early anymore. We're
I
in
know,
June.
This guy isn't the same guy right now. He's not pitching the same way. So let's stop treating him like that dependable guy that we, you know, that Girardi used to go to. You know, you're looking at old numbers. You're looking at what's happened in the past. That's not what he's doing right now. He's had a good stretch, you know, in the middle of sucking, but he's not been the guy that I want in any kind of a high leverage situation. And in a game where you are now jockeying to either win or lose the series, or at least be in a position to try to win the series, and coming off of your first series loss, for me, like, that's a game that I'm trying to keep close. I really want to keep that close because I want to take that game. I want to take that game and keep it in an opportunity to at least put my team in a position to win. But again, he obviously has the confidence in Jonathan Holder for some unknown reason.
Maybe, or he just saw the score. The Yankees are down. I'm going to Holder. It's not. It's, I think he has certain playbook. He has a certain playbook. He does certain things depending on the game situation. And if the Yankees are down, he doesn't like to go to his regular guys for situations like today, right? He knows he's got an opener because Tanaka went and had a baby. So he knows he's got an opener situation. He's going to need all those guys with all the pitches they can get.
You're not, so one of those guys that, you're not one of those guys that's shitting on the paternity leave, are you?
No, my dad is, though.
Of course he is. I told you this.
My dad's actually happy. My dad was happy. I told you. That's what that text meant.
You really need to make it a priority. And you need to tell your dad that people are starting to believe that he doesn't exist. Like that you're, that now it's on you because people are starting to believe that you're making him up. This whole thing. I need him on the show.
I wish I could come up with those sorts of takes. I couldn't think in my wildest dreams when the notification came that Tanaka was on paternity leave that my dad was would have texted that, good, his wife should have more babies. The Yankees rotation, they're falling by the wayside. They're getting picked off one by one. Sabathia's got a knee issue. Herman's now on the injured list, and he's happy Tanaka is gone for a start.
That's sick.
And I got into a big-ass argument with him after Sabathia started to cough up that game. He started to tell me that it's one of the worst free agent contracts in the history of the Yankees franchise, that Sabathia has only had one good season, and 2009 doesn't mean that the contract is worth it. I had to go and explain to him that he finished top three in Cy Young voting each of the first 3 years, that for the last three going on 3.5 years, he's actually been better than league average. We know what he is, though. He is a number five starter. He is a guy that has been a stopper for this team, a clubhouse leader. No, this is not 2009 Sabathia. Go out there and shut you down for 8 or 9 innings. But no one is expecting that out of Sabathia. You're going to get games like you had on Saturday. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. He's going to go on the IL. He's going to have his knee addressed. It's going to happen. But for 22 starts, he's going to give you a good chance to win.
Yes. I think that's accurate. I think I'm still concerned. I'm still going back on this, man. For whatever reason, this time was felt different to me after this cortisone shot, and even his first start back. If you remember the play, it was a ground ball to Luke Voit, who couldn't come up with the ball, and Sabathia actually did sprint to first base.
Right. What are you doing? That's a no-no, Sabathia. That's your own rule. You've made that rule.
Even
I don't cover
if
the bag.
Voit comes up with that ball clean, I still don't think he's out on that play. Either way. Sprinted. It looked like. Looked
what
like
was that? Hard. Did he just feel good? Was he just feeling
felt
good?
And
he just...
Yeah, the cortisone was giving him some false confidence right there, and
he forgot what year it was. He's like, "Oh, this is 2000. This is 2005. I'm back with the Indians. I got to go cover the bag."
And he was limping afterwards. It was a slight limp in that. In afterwards, he actually pitched fine. He finished the game and pitched okay after that. But you know, it's the next day when when the swelling starts happening and the fluid can build up and things like that. And again, kind of balky on that knee again. So I'm really hoping. I don't know how many cortisone shots you can get. I know there's a time frame in between the shots. I don't know exactly what it is, but he's starting to worry me a little bit. And the reason why, like, I wouldn't be worried as much because it's one of those expected things. But shit, everybody's going down, so we need bodies in there to throw 5 innings at least. It's becoming that important to have these guys healthy so that they can actually throw, because they are dropping like flies.
I want to spend a good amount of time on the rotation. First, want to go back. Let's talk about Hap, who has been their most durable starting pitcher this year. Knock on wood, has not spent any time on the injured list. Yes, he sucked against Baltimore. We've well established he cannot pitch against the Baltimore Orioles for whatever reason. That is, if there is ever a that's baseball Susan moment, that's J-Hap against the Baltimore.
Except the next time he faces the Orioles this year, he's going to dominate them. That's what's going to happen. Because there's time in between.
We'll see.
I would
bet. But it was a great start in Toronto on a game that the Yankees needed to win to get out of Toronto with something. He pitched 7 innings and he threw 102 pitches, which was his season high. He gave up 4 hits, 2 of them to Sogard, who's kind of that, like, just pesky little hitter. He's got glasses. Yeah. He's got Rex specs.
Yeah, but he wears the glasses.
Right. But he had the home run, so he still gave up the home run. But it was 7 innings of 1-run ball. And as far as game score goes, it was his tied his season high for best game score. It was a great start.
It was a great start. I think he's, you know, we've really seen much better since his last start and him, you know, trying to find out where he went wrong with the fastball and why he's not able to locate it and where the mechanics are and everything. Whatever he fixed, it's working, because I think we're seeing a much better a guy that's controlling the strike zone, as Aaron Boone loves to say. But he is. He's controlling the strike zone. He's controlling that fastball. He's working off of the fastball. And you know, when he does that, when he's around the zone with his number one pitch, then everything else is more effective, and we're seeing what he is. He's a crafty lefty. We expected this, so this is good. This is good stuff. Now everybody can shut up about him being you know, a washed up lefty and like, oh my God, we have another year, maybe 2 years of J-Hap. Well, you know, if he pitches like he has the last couple outings, then that's not so bad.
But he's a guy that's been going out there every fifth day. And that's more than any of the other starting pitchers have done so far.
Yep. He's been durable, and that's a big deal this year. That's a huge deal this year.
The Yankees took advantage of that big Vlad Jr. error, and they scored 4 runs in the second inning. And Hap had a quick 1-2-3 inning after that. I feel like that was sort of a mini turning point in the game. And then after this game, we got Gary Sanchez anointing DJ LeMahieu the machine when it comes to runners in scoring position.
So what do you when you first heard the nickname of the machine, and everybody, there's like, I've seen so many people on Twitter trying to claim it. Like, yes, I think everybody has called him a machine at some point or another. That doesn't mean that would be his nickname. When someone on the team goes, okay, he's the machine, like, boom, nickname, done. Like, that's a nickname. When you get anointed by a teammate, nickname.
Isn't that Albert Pujols' nickname?
It doesn't matter. I mean, there are people that have doubled up. So this is different. Like, he's a different type of machine. He's a machine that goes to the opposite field and hits, you know, like 21 home runs a season. That's it. He doesn't go out there and hit 40 some home runs, 50 home runs like Pujols did when he was that type of machine.
Yes, that is one of his nicknames, along with Fat Albert and Prince Albert, which I've never heard anyone call him Prince.
Isn't Prince Albert, when you have a piercing in a place that would really hurt?
A nipple ring?
Or nope. Down below. Pretty sure that's a Prince Albert.
A navel ring, Scott? Are you talking about a belly button ring?
Of course.
One of those little dangly ones?
I don't know. I wouldn't want that nickname, though, I can tell you that.
Well, he's been the machine when it comes to runners in scoring position. I think any Yankee fan recognizes that. We have a mailbag question. And I dove into, is he taking a little bit different of an approach when the runners are on base in big situations versus runners not on base? They go to Cleveland, though, and Herman wasn't a great start for Herman. It makes now 4 starts in a row where I put his numbers in here. 4 starts, 19 2/3 innings, 25 hits, 16 runs. That's a 7.32 ERA. The real bad part, though, is he's getting hit. We always talked about how Herman, he needs to limit the walks. If he limits the walks, he's going to get the swings and misses, and he's going to be okay. Well, he's only walked 4 guys in those 19 innings, but he's given up 8 home runs and has a 9.34 OPS against. He's getting crushed.
Yeah, I mean, even early in the season when he was streaking and doing well, the walks were still cut down, and there were still runners on base. We've talked about this a bunch of times. There were still runners on base, but they were not hard hit balls. They were guys that were getting singles. You know, they would spray the ball occasionally, and usually with 2 outs, and you would get out of the inning. And he's just not doing that anymore. He's leaving balls up, like the changeup's not biting like it has been, and he's seemingly not been just the same guy to be able to put away. The swing and miss doesn't seem to be there. I hope it's this injury that's a little nagging thing.
Do you think it is, though?
No, come on. I don't. Let's manage my innings type of situation.
Well, he says it's been bothering him since his outing in Kansas City.
I'm sure there's something going on. I'm sure there is some kind of a discomfort. And
so May 26th was his start in Kansas City. He says he's been managing it since then, but he didn't tell them until Saturday after it was a little bit more painful, more sore after Friday's start. And he finally told them, they shut him down. Yeah, I think this is something that they find. You know, you find a reason to put a guy on the injured list when he's struggling and you can't figure out the reason why he's struggling.
Well, I mean, they're not really at
liberty. And you also know you're going to have to manage him because he's going to have to be shut down managed, limited in some form or fashion.
I mean, I think that's part of it. So whether it's a serious injury or if this is something that probably wouldn't have landed him on the DL, I think we're talking more like that than a phantom injury and just go on the DL because of your because you're struggling. I don't think they're in a position to be able to do that right now. They're just not. They can't be cute with injuries and say that someone's injured because they're struggling. He's been good. You have to believe that the guy will figure it out and turn the corner. So I'm kind of going back on what I said earlier, where I don't think it is. I probably, the fact that he hit it and didn't say anything is, makes a lot more sense to me, I think. And, he's a guy that's trying to fight through it, show that he's durable and can get through something like this. And, you know, we've talked about this with, well, like,
he's also having the best year of his life and he doesn't want that
when
to do end.
You, when, where's the line, right? Like, where's the line when you say, okay, I'm fighting through an injury. I'm being a durable guy. I'm gonna play through this because that's what good teammates do. That's what guys do. Or I'm hurt enough to a point where it's affecting my play.
Well, that's the thing. It's very hypocritical of fans. It's a unfair double standard. I don't know whatever the term is, where we want guys to play through injuries as long as they can still perform. If they can't perform, then don't go out on the field. Right?
It's a catch 22 is what it is.
It's a catch 22. You go out there, you're a gamer, you're going to battle through it, and then you get hit up for four home runs. What the hell are you doing, buddy? Right. Just tell a trainer. You go out there and you're injured and you put up six scoreless. Man, I love that guy. What a grinder. What a pitcher. I want that guy on my team. It's the same guy.
DD jacks up his arm, go in the middle of a game against the Red Sox, doesn't say anything.
Finishes the series.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, we're getting Tommy John surgery because he's grinding through things. So, like, there is a line, and I understand, especially this year, like, you know, guys are going to try to fight through things. Nobody can go on the DL anymore. They all know that. They know that they're
especially
playing.
Especially a guy like Herman.
They know they're playing with house money at this point.
Herman, Urshela, when Estrada was up here, Clint Frazier wanted to play through that ankle injury. Maben, these guys are fighting for their roster spot. They can't start coming out for nagging injuries. Because they might not get their chance to stay on the roster.
I mean, Herman's not fighting for a roster spot at this point, but he's also...
Not so much Herman, but some of these other guys that we didn't expect to be big contributors and have been big contributors.
I think the bottom line...
You might find them fighting
for sure.
Stuff.
I mean, position players, I think, a lot more, you know, than pitchers, and I think they can do that. But so when you're talking about this type of injury, I mean, obviously it's in an area where you have to get strength from your legs. Everything starts as a pitcher from your legs. If you have mobility issues, if you have rotation issues with the hip flexor, then you have problems, you know, with your mechanics, repeating everything. Look, I'm glad he said something and they can nip it in the butt because I think it helps in more ways than one. One, we're not dealing with a guy that's hurt going out there trying to finish off starts that he can't because fatigue's a very real thing now too, especially when you have an injury, because it's probably going to get worse as you're going through this. And we know he already struggles third time through. When you're getting into the fourth, fifth inning, Herman has struggled from the entire time he's been up. So you add an injury to that as well. Now you're throwing mechanics off even worse. Get it fixed because we need him through the long haul.
It was pretty clear he wasn't right for a few starts.
Yes.
Now.
He hasn't looked good.
Maybe this is just the issue. I think it's probably more likely that it's this, plus approaching his season innings from last year, which I think goes underrated. People don't realize that when you're not built up as a starting pitcher, it's hard to jump up a lot in those innings. We're talking about, I think it wasn't it 2014 or 2015?
It was a while ago, yeah.
Was his actual career high in innings was 120-something innings. Last year, he had 80 or 90 innings. This is not a pitcher who is built right now, arm strength-wise, durability-wise, for the long haul.
No, and it's so crazy that we're seeing, you know, similar patterns from what we saw with Severino, even, where he was so dominant early on, and then all of a sudden he hits a wall, and we start seeing, you know, this streak of starts that's just not looking like the same guy. And I think that, you know, it very well could have been fatigue with Severino and injury/fatigue, you know, and fatigue can bring on injuries as well. So you're getting tired and you're doing different things mechanically.
Change up your mechanics.
You start doing different things with your body. You start pushing more with your legs. I don't know. Little things like that can absolutely get tweaked.
The rotation issues, I think, are very real. Sabathia, even, we already mentioned him, not a great start on Saturday. This year, 52 and a third innings, 3.92 ERA. Okay. But a 5.92 FIP. So he's getting, I think what we're seeing is that Sabathia might, his ERA might start to jump up and come closer to that FIP. That's a really bad, that's a bad number, 592.
I mean, again, I think we need to see him get some starts under his belt where we're not looking at a balky knee and him not being able to finish everything, because it seems like he's not able to finish.
Well, his first start off the IL was great against the Red Sox.
It was. I'm hoping there was no swelling or anything that happened after that, and it's going to affect him.
So this brings me to Dallas Keuchel, and he signed in Atlanta for 1 year. $13.2 million, which was $20 million prorated. Right. The Yankees would not budge on their $17.9 million prorated, which comes out to be somewhere between $11 and $12 million. We're talking about a difference of like $1 million to $1.5 million for Dallas Keuchel on a 1 year rest of this season contract. I cannot come up with a logical reason why the Yankees would not have extended themselves $1.5 million to get Dallas Keuchel and have some insurance in this rotation for the rest of the year. You could still go out and trade for a pitcher if you really need to, you really want to. But for 1 year? 1 year! That is what we wanted, 1 year. I don't get it.
It doesn't make any sense to me. The only thing I can remotely get to is that there was something else in this situation that said Dallas Keuchel is either preferring to go to Atlanta and wants to be there, and if the money's close, then he's going to go to Atlanta. Or, you know, there was just an overwhelming sense that he just didn't want to play for the Yankees, or I don't know what it was. Because
but
the money, the
heard
money,
like
makes
a
no
thousand
sense.
Reports he was willing to shave his beard and come to the Yankees.
I have a hard time believing any reports, but at the same time, it doesn't make sense. Because when you're looking at just dollars and cents, when you're looking at just money, and they're going to go over the luxury tax, right? No matter what, with the money that we're going to offer him anyway.
Well, no, they're currently a couple $1 million under it, the next luxury tax threshold. But if they signed him to $11.5 million,
that's what I'm
over.
Saying. So it didn't matter. So it didn't matter if it was 11 or 15. They were over. So
and you're still paying a tax on every
dollar. I understand
that,
but you're over. You're hitting the penalty.
It's such a marginal difference.
What's the reason? Is it because you offered a contract and you're just not going to negotiate at this point?
This seems like, this strikes me as a very stubborn negotiation. We're offering you this.
Looking at the situation and the overall, our pitching staff is in shambles right now. Our team is in shambles right now as far as health. You're looking at a guy who doesn't have a lot of action on his arm this year. He's probably been throwing sim games and going to a high school.
He said for the last month. So I listened to an interview with Keuchel, and he said for the last month I've been doing sim games every fifth day. Okay. So I'm on a 5 day, and I've built my arm strength up to throw about 100 pitches.
Okay, beautiful. So you're not getting the full action on there, but you're getting yourself into a place where you're in good shape, right? Not extra.
No, those are easy 95 pitches.
No doubt about it. So he's in a good place right now. And you're just going to have to pay money to get Dallas Keuchel on your
team. Just money.
When you have just money up and down the lineup. What is the problem here? There has to be something else. There's got to be something else.
It worked out. So it worked out for Kimbrel. He got 3 years. It did not work out for Keuchel holding out. He actually gets less money in his pocket at the end of 2019 than he did if he would have just accepted the qualifying offer from Houston.
What was it, 17?
It was 17.9, but he would have gotten the full 17.9. Now all he gets is 13. Yeah.
So, the other thing you're looking at is now you have a mercenary. You have a guy who has had very good postseasons, a guy that has had very good regular seasons, a guy that has dominated you in the past, who could flip sides and is now a mercenary playing for another contract on a 1 year deal.
Most likely going to face Houston at some point to get to the World Series this year.
Hello. I mean, are we not talking about the perfect ideal situation where you have Darrell Revis coming out and just playing for another contract and trying to dominate again? I've compared it to that because it's very, very similar in the sense where you have a guy that has been very good at times and can come out and still help you in a big way, who knows how to win in big situations. I don't get it.
I don't get it. Unless he is saying to himself and his agent, and they had the discussion saying, if the money is even close, we're going to go to the Braves in the National League because I'm the better chance at putting up good numbers there, setting myself up for next contract.
If that's what happened, and I think that's very real, and that's a very possible situation, and they expressed that look, you're going to have to beat this Braves offer by X amount for me to come over here.
I would have still beaten it,
though. So I'll shave the beard, but we need 20% on top of what the Braves are going to do.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, if that's the situation where they're saying, like, we need X amount, I don't know what that dollar is, but I could see that saying, okay, well, we're not even going to offer, we're not going to go up then because that's not going to happen. Like, if that's more the situation, it's a little bit more understandable, but still, it's just money. You're not giving up assets.
And it's 1 year. I get it. If he ended up signing a multi-year deal in Atlanta, I understand why Brian Cashman wants to keep that flexibility on his side for the rotation going forward. Maybe I don't necessarily 100% agree with it, but I can at least wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around this. Everyone's saying, oh, you know, Cashman's got to move up his sleeve. He's going to go out there, possibly trade for Marcus Stroman or Madison Bumgarner, Max Scherzer. Like, these names are being thrown around. But you know what? That's going to cost prospects and money.
Scherzer's going to be unbelievably expensive. I don't even think it's going to happen.
And so is Stroman. Are you kidding me? The Blue Jays are not going to give up Stroman for any small number of small prospects. It's going to cost you a lot of prospects. Probably going to cost you like Estevan Florial, maybe Clint Frazier. Tario Estrada maybe is in some of these deals.
If we
like,
go
come
after
on.
Any pitcher that's any kind of attractive. Nissen's going to help us with this postseason run. You can pretty much bank on Florial being gone. I fully believe that.
And you're going to trade for him, and then the idea would be either you're taking on his existing contract, or you want to re-sign him eventually and keep him in your system, so you're not just trading for a guy for a year or a year and a half. Okay, so now it's money and prospects.
I would love for the details.
Keichel's just money. It's just money.
I would love for the details to come out on this after a little bit of time.
You think there's got to be something else, right? It's the only explanation.
The other thing too is that you know, like for me, if I'm looking at what this situation is and he's getting a 1 year deal for Atlanta, if I'm Brian Cashman, like this could be an opportunity to steal a really good guy for 2 to 3 years. Go that extra and try to get some guaranteed money, more guaranteed money in his pocket, and actually land a Dallas Keuchel for 2 to 3 years, probably at a relatively bargain price. I think that.
What are you talking
about?
By
going that route too, like he's looking at a 1 year deal right now, and potentially even offering something multi-year and get it. Because I don't know why people are looking at it saying. I mean, I know we're talking about flexibility, but why is signing Dallas Keuchel for 2 to 3 years a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing, but I think that Brian Cashman didn't want to do it.
But why?
Because there could have been a missed opportunity. If you go into next year, you have hopefully a healthy Severino, Paxton, Tanaka, and J-Hap, all definitely in the rotation, whether because of performance or money you're already paying them. So this one rotation spot with Sabathia retiring, where you're going to have Herman coming back for the year. Maybe Loaisiga can step up. Who else knows from the system? Maybe you go out and trade somebody in the offseason. So that's one flexible rotation spot that they have. And I know the counter argument to that is, well, we had five starters going into this year, and look what happened. Severino goes down in the second week of March, and Paxton has spent 3 weeks on the IL because of a knee, and Sabathia gets his knee drained every five starts. So I get it. But 1 year for Keuchel is such a low-risk option.
But that's my point. If it was a one-year deal and you knew you weren't going to sign him unless you went X amount over, I mean, obviously they didn't want to go multi-year.
What would you have gone to for 1 year? If Keuchel said, I want 1 year, $16 million guaranteed, so $3 million over what Atlanta. If you're Brian Cash, try to put yourself in Brian Cashman's shoes. How high do you go?
Yeah, I mean, I probably would go $16 million guaranteed. What does that make it for... It's a
$16 million for it's $16 million. It's probably like a 23. That's
24.
Like a $23-24 million contract if you sign him in back in March.
Well, that's a lot of money. That would be.
That's okay though. It's 1 year.
I understand that.
It's 1 year.
But there's also a limit for what they're going to do, and you can't. There's optics as well for what you're going to do for one guy, especially when you just passed up on a $3 million Gio Gonzalez type thing when you could have had somebody in the rotation.
No, that's different. Gio Gonzalez. Okay, Gio Gonzalez is not the pitcher.
He's not the pitcher. But then at the same time, what's the difference? is the difference, what was the guarantee on Gio? $3 million for...
$3 million plus $500K a start. It could have gone up to like $12
million. So you're looking, I mean, you're putting a huge amount of dollars on Dallas Keuchel. And, you know, there's also these rumors about people talking about that they weren't impressed by Dallas. Then they're not going to offer $11 million for Dallas, $12 million if they weren't impressed. Obviously, they saw enough that they thought he would help out, and they offered a good contract. I don't know what the number would be. $16 million, maybe. Maybe if it's $3 million over and you get it, land him, fine. I think it would have been good. I do think there was a potential. There's something going on here. He said that he doesn't want to play in New York unless this. What is that?
Maybe, and maybe we find that out at some point this season, and we can have some context.
Because if this is Price is Right and going $1 over, like the Yankees would have done that. I firmly believe they would have done that.
They haven't been doing that recently. They've put a price on a player. And they don't spend a cent over that price.
But they don't know what situation they're in the offseason. They know what's happened already. We've seen what's happened. There's been a freaking
right.
That's
even more of a reason to extend yourself a little bit. Yeah, and I know Herman was not on the IL at that point, but Herman was struggling at that point.
They probably knew something.
So there was a lot of uncertainty in the rotation. I think Keuchel would have been a very safe option. And another thing, so I'm not. Has it been announced yet? Do you know when Keuchel's making his first start?
I haven't
start?
Seen it. As soon as I saw he went to Atlanta, he was dead to me.
All right.
He was dead to me before, dead to me after.
Conservatively, he makes his start in 10 days from now, right? 10, 14 days.
Probably less
now.
Than that. I mean, if he stretched out, why wait?
But what you're looking at then is 3 months plus for a guy. Where if you go out and trade for somebody, you get 2 months.
Right.
So you get an extra month if you sign Keuchel
now.
Yeah,
no.
It's more value. He's giving you more value on your roster this year. He's helping you win games in June and July rather than helping you win games in just August and
September.
He's
immediately giving you more organizational value by signing him as a free agent and you not giving up organizational assets. Off the bat, because of the signing, because of the situation, the way this has happened, and now he's looking at a one-year deal. Again, even if like I thought it would have been a good move if he went 2 to 3 years. Maybe he wants to bet on himself, finish out this year, and go for a big contract. Maybe he's looking at.
I respect that,
and that's fine. Yeah, all of these things that I'm talking about very well could have been off the table. We don't know what happened behind the scenes, but your organizational value—if you sign a guy off the street and not have to give up any assets for him. Boom, already more valuable, whether it's at the deadline or before it.
Would I like the Yankees to acquire Marcus Stroman? Yes. Stroman is having a good bounce back year after he was injured at some points last year. This year he's thrown 81 and two-thirds innings, 3.31 ERA, 3.75 FIP, and he's got a little bit high of a walk rate when you compare it to his Cy Young caliber season a couple years ago. He's walking like a extra batter per nine innings, so you'd like to see that come down. But I like Marcus Stroman as a pitcher. People talking about Bumgarner, that they expect Bumgarner to have that Justin Verlander turnaround once he's traded.
Why do we always have to compare someone to a guy that like magically? I mean, no, first of all, Verlander honestly wasn't even that bad when he was gone. He still had the gas in the tank. I think he was just bored, to tell you the damn truth.
Exactly. When maybe on the face of it, like an outsider like us looking at the Detroit Tigers didn't notice that Justin Verlander was starting to turn his shit around. But everyone who was in the know said, oh yeah, we expected that turnaround from Verlander because he was already doing it with the Tigers before he got traded. Bumgarner is struggling, especially for Bumgarner. He's been in decline for 3 years. His ERA is 4. Yes, add Bumgarner to the team if you can get him for a reasonable prospect haul, because that is more insurance in the rotation. But I by no means expect Madison Bumgarner to come in here and act like it's 2014 against the Royals and pitch every friggin' day for nine innings.
No, I mean, I don't either. And, you know, if he continues to struggle, there's possible value there. But what do the Giants really have?
You're trading for a struggling pitcher.
Well, I don't know. I know. But you're also banking on the fact that, you know, he can turn.
He'll
it
improve
on.
Some.
He can turn it on,
but
because that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants it to be turned on.
That's not a switch. That's not a. If don't you think Madison Bumgarner, if he could pitch well, if he could be pitching better than he's pitching right now, don't you think he would be pitching better? These guys are competitors. They don't want to go out there and suck.
Especially a guy like Madison Bumgarner. I think we're seeing more diminished stuff from him. Whereas Verlander was, you still saw the high fastball. You still saw the Bugs Bunny breaking ball. Like the guy. Still had his stuff. There was no diminishing in his stuff.
Do you know what I like, though? You know what I'm actually excited about? I think the Yankees are going to trade for a pitcher. They're going to trade for a pitcher at some point this year. We will have a direct
comparison
result of did Brian Cashman make the right decision based on how Keuchel performs for the rest of the year and how the pitcher, whoever they acquire, performs and who the prospects are that they have to give up. Because if
Keuchel could, this could look really ugly later.
Yes. If Keuchel and player X perform the same for the year, but the Yankees have to trade Clint Frazier to get player X, guess what? That's a loss. Yeah.
No doubt about it. If
so the only way this works out for Brian Cashman is if Keuchel struggles and the guy they acquire pitches
or
well.
The Yankees win a championship. Because then nobody gives a shit.
Sure. I mean, if you win a championship, then you just say, okay, well, whatever happened, and we won a championship. Fine. I agree. But if they don't win the championship and Keuchel pitches equal or better than whoever they acquire, that's an L for Cashman.
Yeah, no doubt. But again, that's assuming that it could have actually happened. Because I'm not convinced that it could have happened.
Well, that's our assumption right now. That's the assumption we have to go on right now.
My assumption, because I love Cashman and I think he's a genius, is that something else is going on and we're not hearing it.
Maybe. Possibly. Didi's back. How about that? Sir Symphony. Mr. Piano Man taught himself the frickin' symphony while he was out. I saw that tweet and I'm just like,
you just smile, you know, and what, shake
Didi?
Your head.
Screw,
like, yeah.
Screw you, Didi. Why do you have to be so damn good at everything?
Not only that, but his opening, he puts together a video of
oh, it was
of
awesome.
Animation
Chills.
That he basically drew the entire time he was up. He talked about the frames. How many, I've done animation accounts on Adobe and stuff like this. Shit is not easy. It is not easy. It takes a lot of time to do it. Granted, he had a lot of time and he's a good artist. And he's a creative dude, but it was very cool. Very cool. Very original. Very creative. And I love the fact that he puts his own little stamp on something. But learning the piano, having one in Tampa, having, you know, one at home and learning how to play like hard stuff. It's pretty crazy. The guy's phenomenal.
Isn't he also trilingual?
Probably.
I believe he speaks.
I'd be surprised if it was less. I actually would be. I would, if I were to bet, it would be over three languages.
So I know he speaks three. I know he speaks English, Dutch, and Spanish. Okay. And yeah, he can probably converse in like
and
Japanese.
I guarantee Portuguese is in there. I guarantee he could do that. I feel like he could fall asleep with a Portuguese book under his pillow and learn it.
We were right. Estrada was the move for Didi. Boone said, "This is what he said to Estrada. You know you can play up here. You know you can come up here and help us win games. We know that. But now take advantage of the time where you're getting every day at bats and reps." That's we said this is going to be the reason why Morales, who we'll talk about in a second, who everyone hates, and I get why you hate him, but why Morales is still here and Estrada is not. With all these infielders now healthy and on the roster, Estrada had no role. And they're not going to stash him on the bench to play three plate appearances every 15 games. It's pointless.
Well, you're also, potentially, you know, stunting a growth right there. You want this guy to play as a young dude. He was out last year because of a freaking bullet wound. You want the guy to come in and get reps and play as much as possible to continue his progression as a player. So by sitting on the bench doing nothing is not that way. So we can have old man Morales sit on the bench and let his bones get old and brittle, and that's it. But this shit's getting old. It's getting old. Yeah.
With Didi, though, so he's 4-for-8 so far. The error on Sunday afternoon was terrible. I think that's just a – what is that? What happened there? Dude, not following the ball into his glove. Like, it was just bad. You never see it from Didi. I think it's just bad timing. He went in for defense. This whole situation was weird. Okay,
it was the all-hands ninth team. Inning. It was the all-hands team going in.
No, but ninth inning, Voit's on third – Voit's on first base. And you're like, okay, well, if there's a double, Voit's not going to score unless the thing gets bobbled out there. So you don't pinch run for him there. I would have. He gets to third base with one out, and you don't pinch run. I definitely would have pinch run Didi at that point. He's the only guy who could pinch run who's on the bench faster than Voit. You don't pinch run for him. Okay. But then Voit comes out of the game, and Didi goes in the game for defense in the bottom of the ninth. How the hell does that make sense? If you're going to swap the players anyway, get the faster guy on base.
Yeah, it's strange. It's like there was indecision. You couldn't make the decision. Was going back and forth, and then he's like, "Ah, we got it. So now we're going to go in. We have a lead. Let's secure it, and make sure that we have our best defensive team out there." Because maybe he was trying to not play Didi, and I think that's part of it. Like he was really at the end of the day.
So then don't play
trying
Didi.
Not to play Didi. But then when you got when the lead happened. And you're now ready to secure that lead. You want to throw your all hands team. It's just a half inning at defense, which he could do in his sleep. And he moves before the ball. That's what happens.
Hey, Scott, quick question for you. What did Didi injure?
It's an arm.
Okay. Do you use your arm? I mean, sort of serious tension when you're running?
Yeah, it's like a momentum thing. You know,
it's a lower body activity.
Well, there's a hinge, in the elbow. The elbow swings like you would like be punching the sky.
If Didi tore up his knee in the offseason and you don't want to pinch run him, I get it. He had Tommy John surgery. You can pinch run him, especially if you're. I don't know. I don't get it.
I think there was indecision. I think that was the biggest thing, and he's just trying not to use him until he has to. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to get in the head here. I would have absolutely pinch run Luke Voit when he's on first base. That's when I would have gotten rid.
And maybe Didi doesn't even score. Maybe they don't send him because they don't want to take that chance. And fine, I get it. But you ended up getting a sac fly. Frazier hits the ball deep enough for Voit to score. But what if that ball was 20 feet short?
Yeah, then there's a play, and then lots of question marks.
Kendrys Morales is this year's Chris Carter, 100%. So he was struggling with Oakland, 569 OPS. That's bad. But we're like, oh, well, he's walking more and his exit velocity is good. And the nerds found something in Kendrys Morales and he's going to come in. And he hits a home run in like his first or second game. And we're all like, oh, did the nerds do it again or did the nerds
David
do it
Justice,
again?
Here we
no,
come.
The nerds did not do it again because so far with the Yankees, 493 OPS. That sucks. That's so bad. He's so bad, and he can't run the bases, and he was terrible running the bases on Friday night. He gets thrown out in the middle, just like thumb up his ass, not knowing what he's doing between third and home plate on a comebacker to the pitcher. Get him off this team. I have a few options that they can go to if they're racking their brain. Hey, nerds, put on the podcast right now. I will tell you what you can do. You can DH Clint Frazier and play Cameron Maben in right field. That would be a better option. You can call up Mike Ford, and he can play first base when you need to give Voit a day off, and he can DH. That would be a better option. Sabathia could hit better than Cameron Maben right now, I think. Because Sabathia has a 530 OPS in his career, and right now, Kendrys Morales has a 493 OPS.
All right, here's where we'll really know how badly you want this guy off your team. So Mike Ford, let's just say not an option. Logan Morrison coming up. Logan Morrison playing first base.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I forgot about Logan Morrison.
He's still down there. A little Lomo action, bringing up.
Yeah, because you know what?
Gary Sanchez is feeling Logan Morrison more than Kendrys Morales, and not only that, you're now toying with Gary Sanchez, who's having an unbelievable season.
Unbelievable. Thank you for bringing this up.
And let's bring in some kryptonite.
No, it's not kryptonite. Are you kidding? Gary Sanchez put him in a body bag. If anything, this would motivate
him.
Gary Sanchez even more.
But just to have him on the team, just any kind of bad vibes. I don't know.
Anyone could hit better than Kendrys Morales right now, and I think there's better options. Shit, Tario Estrada is a better option. He could play the outfield.
He could probably
too,
play first base.
At least he's giving you
McBroomy. Give me
McBroomy.
I want McBroomy on this team.
Thank you for bringing up Gary Sanchez. He had a good defensive game on Friday night. He threw out Kipnis on a perfect missile throw that basically Kipnis stole the bag off of Herman and Sanchez still threw him out. He blocked a couple of spike curveballs by Herman in the dirt. And I went and looked it up these stats today. So 2019, he's caught 318 innings and he has four pass balls. That's one pass ball every 79 innings. In his previous two seasons, 34 pass balls in 1,534 innings. That's one every 45 innings. He has cut his pass ball rate pretty much in half. And he's leading or near the top in the American League in home runs as a catcher. Like, this is the Gary Sanchez we thought.
This is the guy that when he came up, we saw the cannon arm. We really didn't see as much defensive liabilities as we did after his first tour. And then last year, everybody was down. Like, some people were like, done. That's it. Like, you're crazy if you thought that. The fact is, I think both of us, well, one, I know for a fact, like, I have I have gotten on his defense big time because it's frustrating watching it, and there's no doubt about it.
And I think there's been times that it's very fair to get on.
You should. There's a notion in fandom where you can you're not allowed to get on a guy because of half of his play. Okay, so a guy is unbelievable at the plate, but dog shit on defense. You can't say anything about it because he's hitting the plate. Well, that's just not accurate. I don't understand that. Like, I can't control myself.
That's like the whole Clint Frazier thing with the media, where he's like, the media is not covering my offense; they're only covering my defense.
So the people that say that, like, I don't understand you. You make no sense to me. What I do is I see what's happening with my eyes, and if it's frustrating me, I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to have an emotion, whether they're raking at the plate or not. There's two facets of a game. So let me get to the good stuff. Like, the guy's gotten in better shape. He looks physically like he's in better shape. He's moving better. You could just tell his head is on the right path right now. Like, he came in motivated. He had a good offseason, I think. It looks like he's worked on his defense tremendously, because Sunday as well, with Chapman in, blocking balls left and right, like, looked really, really good.
A really good one against Britain, so, too. And these don't even, like, I think Kay said it in passing, like, oh, good block there by Gary Sanchez. And I went, and that triggered. I was like, you know what? He is blocking the ball a lot better this year. Yes, the numbers prove it. He's been, I know we say LeMahieu's been their best player all around from start of the year till now. Yes, Gary Sanchez is right there, number two.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to decipher between if you're talking about number one, but he's been unbelievable. So there's a lot of credit that needs to go to Gary Sanchez with how he's handled it. And maybe, you know, maybe that was a real thing. Maybe there was a real thing with Girardi and Sanchez where they just weren't on the same page. And when you're not there and when you're not connecting and there's a, you know, a rift between the player and the manager, it can affect the way that, you know, the on-field play and how things happen. Maybe that was a very real thing, because it was very clear that one of the first things that Aaron Boone did was establish a relationship with Gary Sanchez. And he did that. And, you know, if that's part of it, then good on them fixing this situation and getting Gary in a good place where he can have success, because he's going to be if this team is going to go far, a lot of it's going to be behind Gary Sanchez.
You know who we're not hearing from?
Who's that?
The Romanites.
Yeah. They just like to pop up
officially.
Occasionally. They're only there because they like to shit on the guy that has the expectations of doing well. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be anybody. Yeah. It could be anybody. It doesn't even need to be Romine. It could be anybody.
Romine's a better hitter than Morales. That could be a better DH.
Can Morales catch?
So Glaber sat out a couple days with a sore left shoulder. He's fine though. Betances had a setback, unfortunately. He felt sore after his Wednesday throwing session and did not throw in his bullpen on Friday. And he had an MRI. Reports are that it was clean, and the soreness is not related to his shoulder. But this is bad news for Betances. I don't know if we do see him at any point this year.
Well, I mean, the fact that the MRI came back up clean, they're just going to do similar to...
It's been clean the whole time, though, except for the bone spur, which they didn't tell him about.
Which they didn't tell him about. Oh, by the way, we're gonna completely mess with your career. Our thumb is on your career, just so you know.
From the very beginning, from the moment they drafted him.
So shitty. But... at least that's clean. So we're gonna now probably get some rest. Then he'll ramp back up again, and we'll see what happens again. So this is just a kind of a reset button. But hopefully it's not very long, because we saw it with Paxton where he was able to come back from a setback pretty quick, actually. And hopefully...
But Paxton's talking about, I mean, it's a knee.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's still a setback in a sense where you're resting and you're going to try to ramp back up again. Things were clean. You're just letting, Father Time do its thing and just try to heal with rest. Hopefully it can help.
This sucks for Betances because he's in a free agent year.
Yeah. It sucks. It sucks for Betances. It sucks for the Yankees because they could clearly use him. And I think that this is going to be, just as the time goes on, we're going to start seeing more and more how much we need him, because these guys are going to get more reps and they're going to get more work. And when the season goes on, we're going to look back and say, wow, they threw a lot.
It's more Jonathan Holder appearances. It's more... having to use Tarpley in a save situation. It worked out okay, but it's more of those sorts of situations where you maybe could go to Betances.
And who knows, if we start seeing more setbacks, or we start seeing guys struggle, and like fatigue becomes a real thing with guys who are throwing more than, who knows, the trade deadline could be something different. We might be going for like a Brad Hand again, trying to bolster the bullpen because we're losing arms and we don't have guys coming back. I mean, there are situations where you could see that if we have a couple things go wrong, like there could be mayday in this pitching staff. Like very bad things could be happening. They're teetering mm-hmm. on it. It's getting close.
The depth, they're scraping yes. the bottom of the barrel. For
and,
the
I know,
depth.
And I know Chance Adams has been much better since he got back from this from this season. The further he's come back from rehabbing his arm, he's been much better. Yeah. And he's been much better in Scranton since he's been back. And we saw what he did. He did well
in the start in Kansas City.
He earned another opportunity. And I think he's going to get it. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing else. I mean, that was one of the things. Like, situations have to go right for him to come up. And he's got to throw strikes. He's starting to throw
actually,
more strikes.
Actually, I don't think it was a start. It was a relief appearance in Kansas City. But it was during an
opener good. Type situation, whatever.
Yeah,
I think he threw four innings. So he's had a couple of four innings opportunities in the major leagues where he's been good.
Yeah, we'll see him again soon. I think we'll see him again soon. It's because of all the lack of options that this team has going forward with all the
injuries, with all the guys
banged up. I mean, even Paxton, who we're going to see pitch against the Mets on Tuesday, I mean, he's still ramping up.
Yeah.
So, and Tanaka is scheduled to pitch on Monday against the Mets. So he missed one day. Vargas on Monday for the Mets going. Wheeler on Tuesday. Weird scheduling. So they're in Cleveland this weekend. They fly back home for just two games against the Mets. Then they have an off day on Wednesday, which basically never happens. And then they fly back to Chicago for a quick road trip in Chicago. I don't know.
Is there a Yankee bias for the schedule? Can we start that?
No, I think what happened is we've talked about how weird the schedule has been this year. I really think the London games
and the fact
that they had to buffer it with off days kind of screwed everything else up. It's like a ripple effect. You look from that June and then you go out and you're like, okay, I see what happened here.
Well, yeah, and you're bunching up so many of these Red Sox games too because of the London series, because it's a short series. And then you have to figure everything else out, and now you know, we're going to play them basically a seven-game series in a very short amount of time.
Eight-game series.
So it's very strange, and I agree. I think the London series definitely screwed things up. It was a weird scheduling. The fact that we had the Orioles so early, again, probably one of those situations that was a direct effect because it's in division now.
It's all done by an algorithm. A computer generates this
schedule. Nerds!
But when there's only two teams in the league out of 30 that are doing these London games, and everyone else is playing a normal schedule, I think that's why it's weird. Yeah. All right, let's move on to mailbag questions. If you guys want to submit questions for the podcast, we do them every Monday episode. Go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, and you can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast. Join the Facebook group, all that good stuff. Also, we haven't said this in a while. You guys go out there and rate and review the podcast, why don't you?
Yeah, we haven't asked in quite some time. So if you are a new listener, if you have been listening for a long time and haven't done this, help us out. Go rate and review. Give us 5 stars. Give us something witty in the comments. Make fun of us. Do whatever you want to do. That's fine. We have thick skin. We'll read some of them on the next show or on our next Thursday show. How about that? We'll read some of the new reviews. So go out there, give us a rating and review. And if you have Yankees friends, tell them about the show.
All right. First up, Jeffrey Muller at GMuller2112 on Twitter. Is DJ better situational hitting with runners in scoring position a result of a different plate approach that he needs to apply to the rest of his very good at-bats? Or can he just really be that clutch? So this is the thing I teased. This is I dove into it. So his strikeout percentage this year is 13%. It's excellent. He's actually a career 15% rate, so he's beating his career rate. His contact rate is slightly better than career average as well, 88.3%. His spray charts are pretty much the same in all situations. Pulls it 27% of the time, up the middle 38%, opposite field 34%. So we talked about that, right? Up the middle and to the right side, this is the kind of hitter he is. Runners in scoring position, keep in mind this is Sunday because I know he got another hit, but I know he's batting about 500 now. 1,112 OPS with runners in scoring position, only an 11.3% strikeout rate. Non-risk situations, .263 batting average, .738 OPS, 15.2% strikeout rate. So he is rising to the occasion. He makes more contact with runners in scoring position. He's getting hits when it matters. He's hitting the ball hard when it matters. I talked about this with Robert Flores when we were talking about the whole clutch thing. and how some people don't believe in clutch, that whatever you do in a non-pressure situation, you're just as likely to do in a pressure situation. But we're human. These guys are human. There's a human element in this. And when there's a human element, some guys get tense. When there's game on the line or guy on third base, some guys relax. And I think DJ LeMahieu can relax.
I think it is one of those things. I think he doesn't... Flores was talking about the heartbeat, like getting that nice calm heartbeat, not getting raised, not pressing too much, being able to stay in that moment and almost like really zoning in. A-Rod said something about it. I thought it was just hilarious. He goes, there's certain guys that could do this. We call it the zone. I was like, shut the. We call it the.
Well, hey, man, A-Rod hit 24.
I know, but he's just so A-Rod have corny, man.
But 24 career Grand Slams, zone.
But nobody calls it the zone. Like, it's like the claw. Like, it's just, it's so dumb. Anyway, there are guys that I think that can do that and can master the big moments. And the other thing is, I do think he's more aggressive too. I think he looks to attack when there's runners on and he's looking for mistakes. And he's not looking to do too much, but he's looking to, you know, put a good swing on it. And I do think he looks opposite way a lot of times when he's got runners on. You see those runners in scoring position, it's up the middle, it's to the right. The guy's phenomenal, but he does attack.
So I don't remember where I heard or read this. I believe, I don't know, article something. But a pitcher, when there's guys on base, the pitcher's in trouble. Right. The batter's not in trouble. The pitcher's in trouble. Some guys don't understand that. Some batters don't understand that. And I think if you can put yourself in that mindset where the pitcher has to make a pitch against me. I am attacking him. He is no longer attacking me because he's in a tough jam. I think some guys don't look at it that way. And I think that's a problem for some hitters.
Well, I don't even necessarily think it's a problem for some hitters. I think a lot of guys go up with the same mentality because they don't want to change things because they think it'll screw with them. You know, the human mind is a very strange place. You know what I mean? Like, guys, if they start thinking different things, then you know, maybe their mechanics are different or they have certain checkpoints or whatever the hell it is. You know, sometimes you just can't tune that out and change the way you are. And I don't necessarily think he's going up there changing the way he is. I think just he's genetically disposed, like chemically ready to go in pressure situations. It just ramps up for him and he's just better. So, not that he's not good otherwise. He's still good otherwise, but he just is able to lock in for that much more. You know, the focus, the zone, as the athletes call it.
We should also mention Clint Frazier's kind of been...
He's all the same type of guy.
DJ LeMahieu Jr. here, Mr. Risp Jr., 14 for 33. That's a .424 batting average. He had the clutch sack fly in the ninth inning today. So, talking about toxoplasmosis last week, does he get too amped up? Although he's reining in that toxoplasmosis when there's guys on
scoring. No, the toxo can get you going in a moment like that too. I mean, it
can help in certain situations.
It's cat-like instincts. Okay, you can do these things. Cat, as much as I will completely shit on cats, they got good instincts. They always land on their feet. So when they're falling from 3-4 stories up, Not much panic happening, right? They're going to land on their feet, and they do, and they walk away. Yeah. So when you're looking at a guy like Frazier, who I think feeds off of that, I think that he loves that. I think that all of this nonsense around him, like stuff like this, helps him out at the plate. I think he feeds off of this. So
I don't know how you could argue otherwise. He's doing tremendously at the plate, and ever since the game against the Red Sox, hasn't made a stupid play in right field.
I mean, it's like he looks for it, too, sometimes. I love it. I love the fact that he can use it and turn it into something positive. But you know, you just kind of hope, like, oh, Clint, great game. You had a really good game out there. I don't need you to tell me I had a good game. I know I had a good game. You don't think I could have a good game? You don't think I could have had a good game? I'll show you how I can have a good game. You know, like, even if you compliment him, he's just like, oh, was there a tone in? Was there? Yeah, I'm not gonna blink. I'm just going to stare you down.
But then he does the Robert De Niro in like Meet the Parents. He
didn't even need to do that.
I'm looking at you.
Daggers. But yeah, he definitely uses it. And, you know, I love that chip on the shoulder mentality.
11% strikeout rate with runners in scoring position for DJ LeMahieu.
Phenomenal.
Just awesome. Exactly what we were lacking last year. All right. Jack Abbott. Which current Yankee do you think has the potential to be a great manager after they retire from playing? I feel like Gardner could lead a team to a World Series. Anybody? Anybody on the team that strikes you as a good manager? I don't think anyone thought Aaron Boone, when like he was playing, was going to be a good manager. And here,
it's in his family. I mean, his family has had managerial experience, so it probably isn't too far out. You look at the backup catcher. I look at Austin Romine as the, when you're looking at stereotypical, you know, the mold of a manager. A lot of them are catchers, and a lot of them are
grinders.
Not,
you got to be a grinder to be a manager.
So I think Romine could probably be one of those guys. I could see him doing being a coach later in his career. So I'll pick him. He's my guy.
Gardner hit a home run on Sunday to break out of a 1-for-23 cold streak. I know he's always been a streaky player, but doesn't it seem like this year has been worse? Where it's he's had a couple hot, you know, 10, 12, 20 at bats that have completely saved his otherwise terrible season.
I feel like it happens every year. I don't even know how to.
Not this bad though. You look at some of it. You want to talk about getting old and how my Friday night went? I spent Friday night when the Yankees were losing charting Brett Gardner's batting average and hits each game. I actually made Excel charts and tweeted them out. I looked myself in the mirror and I was like, you know, that's a wrap. It is over with.
It's going to get worse.
Friday night, 10 p.m., tweeting out Brett Gardner charts.
Yeah, it's going to get, you should have sent them directly to Neil Keefe. It would have been beautiful.
Yeah, he's not the biggest Gardner fan.
I think it's just who he is at this point, and we're going to see. We're going to see another hot streak, and we're going to see more cold streaks. And hopefully at the end of the season, we land on a hot streak.
All right. Final thing. Final mailbag question, Jake Kale. So he says, hey guys, I've been a listener for almost 2 years. My family and I are coming in from Ohio. We have tickets for the July 20 game against Colorado. I didn't realize that there was already an event until now. Any chance I could just swing by 205 at some point to meet you guys and say what's up? Not only could you do that, you could come to the pregame party too beforehand. You don't need a ticket to get into the pregame party. Want to build this crew?
I have a better option. I have a much better option, actually.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
It's a no-brainer here, Jake. One, we've talked about this for a long time. Okay, it's on the website. Let's get that together. And number two, you could go sell your tickets right now and probably make the same money back, maybe even make a couple bucks on it, and then get tickets for Section 205 to sit with all of us. So that's my solution. My solution, sell your tickets, come sit with the crew.
Agree. And also, if you guys are out there, June 22nd against Houston, that event is coming up fast. T-shirt, the cutoffs, like pretty much.
I mean, yeah, today is Monday that you guys are listening to this. I'm ordering all the shirts today. I'll probably put another order in this week as well. But we're going to be selling game tickets throughout the week. But if you want your shirt for game time, get your order in ASAP, because we're not messing around. We're getting that thing in.
All right, final topic. It's a quick one. So there was a story, weird story I saw in the New York Post. A woman jumped into the Yankees bullpen on Saturday. She was wasted. She just started shaking hands with everybody. Just in the Yankees bullpen, Yankees fan drunk in Cleveland. Yeah. Yankees are losing. Yeah. Well, what do? I'm going to drop down 10 feet into the bullpen and say what's up. She shook all of our hands except Chad Green, said Zach Britton.
I think it's funny that she doesn't go to Chad Green. I don't know why. But here's the other thing.
Chad Green was in the zone. He was in the A-Rod zone getting ready for his opener the next day.
So he snubbed her. I think she snubbed him. That's what I think. But someone didn't get... She shook everybody's hand?
Zach Britton said she shook all of our hands except Chad Green.
That takes a solid amount of time to do that. Like, where's security here? And why is this girl in there shaking everybody's hand, going down the line, just shaking hands? And not getting tackled.
So the story said she spent multiple innings trying to get into the bullpen. And the Yankees players saw this happening. And then she finally got in.
So they were kind of rooting for her almost.
Casual about it. But then Britton's like, yeah, you know, we thought about it afterwards. And like, she could have been crazy and killed us all. Right. Like that is not something. I guess if it's like a drunk woman who just like, I love you guys. Yeah. Okay, fine. Let's shake her hand. But if it's like some angry drunk dude, maybe you don't want that to happen.
It's an interesting story. I'm wondering where the Cleveland security is though. Not really caring too much about the Yankees players. That's what I see.
She's in the tank until apparently Monday.
That's a long time to be in the
story. Said she's spending time in jail until Monday morning is when she's.
That's
gonna
a
get
solid
out.
Amount of time.
I have a feeling this woman's going to regret this decision.
I feel like she already regretted it.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We got the Mets series this week, couple quick games. We will be back to talk to you guys on Thursday. Scott, last words?
Got to beat the Mets. That's it. We got to beat the Mets. Just let's just squash little brother and just treat them like they are, an inferior team.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.